be talking about a little bit of the non-prey foods of coccinellas. Usually, predator ecologists tend to focus on predation by natural enemies. This is understandable, since this is one of the real functions that we're trying to get out of our natural enemies. In reality, many natural enemies, if not most, are facultatively phytophagous to some degree, or at least consume non-prey foods at some point during their lives. This type of feeding has really important implications for their natural histories, and coccinellids are no exceptions to that. So I guess that the goal of this talk is to sort of introduce these different non-prey foods, which coccinellids from the literature have been feeding on them, and the importance of this type of feeding on for the life history of these beetles. Also, I should mention that I'm focusing mostly on the predaceous species of these coccinellids. As Natalia mentioned earlier, there's also phytophagous, purely phytophagous, and as you'll hear next, there's also purely mycophagous species. So we've known that coccinellids are omnivores for a long time. I think maybe not the first report of omnivory in coccinellidae, but certainly one of the best early reports was done by Stephen Forbes back in Illinois in the 1800s. What he did basically was pull the stomachs out of these lady beetles that were presumed to be exclusively entomophagous, and found that they'd been feeding on a whole range of different types of foods, including fungal spores, pollen, and whatnot. Not only did he do these really early gut analyses, but he also kind of came up with a good reason for why they might be doing that, and that reason being that prey isn't always easy to get your tarsi on. A lot of times prey populations are temporally and spatially aggregated, and so it's a good idea to have a plan B in your toolbox, namely being able to consume non-prey foods when prey is scarce. Subsequently, it's an unfortunate thing that gut analyses have really been done very infrequently, so we tend to have this really overinflated role of prey to the life history of these coccinellids. So the types of foods that coccinellids consume in addition to prey fall within probably four categories. Five if you add Susan Moser's recent work, if you were lucky enough to catch her talk, where she found pure phytophagy in some lady beetles that are normally considered entomophagous. Here's a squash of a Coleomagilla maculata larva, and what you see is that indeed there may be a few prey hunks in there, but mostly it's pollen, there's some fungal spores in there, and so the reality of the situation is that there's a lot of different foods in the stomachs of these things. Categories of non-prey foods would fall into, in my opinion, sugar sources, fungal material, pollen, and then there's some growing number of instances of feeding on fruits by these lady beetles. These foods differ in their abundance and in their quality. And the variability in these foods, their nutritional suitability for lady beetles, has important implications for their life histories. First type of non-prey foods that I'm going to be talking about is glucophagy, sugar feeding. Sugar, the world is a lot sweeter than I think we'd like to think it is. Whatever flower or plants aren't squirting nectar through their flowers or extra floral nectaries are oftentimes splattered with honeydew from Homopteran herbivores. While we may have missed a lot of this, the sugar that's pretty pervasive in the environment, natural enemies really have long recognized that it's there and regularly take advantage of it. Coccinellids are probably some of the most frequent visitors to extra floral nectaries of plants. They also, in addition to using honeydew as an important food source, They also use this honeydew in as a cue for prey location. So in this case, the non-prey food is also has an additional function. Floral architecture oftentimes restricts floral nectar as a source of sugar for coccinellids because they're kind of big and burly and have trouble accessing nectaries on many plants. And so, consequently, in the literature, this tends to be one of the least frequently reported types of sugar feeding. I would argue that pollen is probably one of the more important, if not the most important, non-prey foods for coccinellids. In a pretty extensive review of the literature, I found over the past 120 years or so, 49 studies that have documented pollen feeding by lady beetles. 37 species of coccinellids are reported, and this pollen has come from at least 62 species of plants. So it's a lot more. I really had to dig to get a lot of these reports. It's not always immediately apparent that many of the coccinellids that we love to study and play around with are feeding on pollen under field conditions. In the field, there's at least two species are believed to be exclusively pollinivorous. These species occur in alpine habitats where prey is pretty scarce, but pollen is pretty pervasive from these alpine plants. Without a doubt, the best understood forms of pollen feeding within coccinellids comes with our favorite lab rat, Coleum agila maculata. And this species is actually pretty unique in that it can actually complete development on a diet consisting solely of corn pollen, and it can even reproduce on these on corn pollen alone. Fruit is another non-prey foods for many lady beetles. Harmonia axyritis has actually been reported as being a pest of fruit production in several cases, and probably is sort of the flagship for this form of feeding in coccinellids. Harmonia axyritis feeds on a range of different fruits. With the apples and peaches, it tends to prefer fruits that are previously damaged, and then they aggregate to this wound and cause further hampering. Enologists are actually pretty worried about the feeding on grapes because when they're creating their wine and they get a lady beetle in there that tastes not so good, changes the quality of that wine. In addition to Harmonia axyritis, which is probably the best-known fruit feeder, a couple of other species have also been reported to consume fruit. So this isn't, even though Harmonia kind of gets a bad rap, there's a couple of other species that are also known to consume the fruit. This tends to be late season when prey is scarce. I think that mycophagy is probably the most pervasive but least understood form of non-prey foods for natural enemies. When we look into the stomachs of coccinellids, we tend to find fungal spores. However, we also tend to write this off as a form of form of food for the importance of this food for coccinellids. I think Trilch did a really nice job where he examined the feeding behavior of Coccinella septa punctata, which is oftentimes regarded as a Phaedophaga species, and found that fungal material consisted of or provided most of the diet of this insect, especially late in the season. So I think that we need to start to consider the importance of fungal feeding a little bit more for coccinellids in general. Okay, John. So yeah, lady beetles eat non-prey foods, but how important is this to their behavior, and their life histories? When I've looked through the literature, it seems like the effects of non-prey foods tends to fall within four general parameters that influence the population dynamics of coccinellid beetles. First, non-prey foods sustain populations of lady beetles in the absence of prey, and then they also affect reproduction, diapause, and dispersal. And I'll discuss each of these a little more in depth. When prey is scarce or suboptimal, this is sort of meets Hodeck's early definition of the alternative food concept, where non-prey foods frequently can't entirely support all of the life processes of a coccinellid species, but they are able to they are nevertheless an important source of food when other types of food, better types of food, are absent. Pollen and sugar have repeatedly been shown to support survival in coccinellids, and indeed they can support the survival of these species for extremely long periods of time in the absence of other food types. Also, when suboptimal prey are the only things that are available for coccinellids, they can feed on non-prey foods, promote fitness even to the level that an ideal diet can. Reproduction is, in addition to, very seldom can coccinellids complete reproduction on a diet solely of non-prey foods. However, one species, Coleomyrgula maculata, we found can do so on corn pollen. Rather, they often, when you add non-prey foods to a prey-only diet, they tend to have higher fecundity. These can also prime the reproductive system when prey is absent, for instance, in the spring, and so they can respond more quickly to prey availability. Diapause, both within season diapause, or like estivation type situations, when prey availability goes down, non-prey foods are able to support coccinellid populations in the field until prey becomes available again. This is considered a sort of reduced activity period during the heat of the summer. Also, fat reserves are known to be accumulated from pollen feeding in these species that basically can support overwintering. 2 minutes left. All right, that's good. Finally, in the spring, when prey is absent, coccinellids are able to feed on nectar and pollen sources, and so can fuel their early migrations and thus aid in their dispersal. Given the availability and diversity of these non-prey foods, it's interesting to kind of think about the relative quality of them and how lady beetles can thus use them for their life history. When we look at calories, basically the energy content of different types of non-prey foods, protein content and lipid, with prey as the top line there, it's sort of the brass ring that all non-prey foods are trying to achieve. We see that pollen tends to have a very similar caloric content to prey, very high levels of protein, but lipids tends to be a little bit compromised compared to many prey species. Vegetation, which I didn't describe very extensively in this talk, tends to get lower and lower from there. Nectar has about 4 calories per gram, but of course it's diluted. Very little protein and very little lipids in it. So this kind of gives an idea of what these non-prey foods can support in terms of their in terms of coccinellid natural history. And we are able to achieve sort of a relative ranking of these non-prey foods for natural enemies. So conclusions. I guess omnivory is a lot more extensive than many people realize within entomophagous insects. And it has not only important implications for just the life history of coccinellids, but also for their application in agriculture and IPM systems. So a broader understanding of the feeding behavior will afford us a better opportunity for understanding how to apply and understand what's going on under field conditions. And I think I've probably overextended my time, but that's all right.